KFI AM 640. It's live everywhere on the free iHeartRadio app. Good morning. It's the Bill Handel Show. Bill's not here today. I'm Wayne Resnick. And we have a lot coming up on today's show. It's pretty cool. Steve Gregory from KFI News is going to join us at 7:30. He is all over the latest development in the disappearance of Kristen Smart. This is 25 years ago that this young lady disappeared. And now we fast forward and somebody has been arrested. Actually, two people have been arrested. A father-son duo. And Steve will have all the history of the thing and all the new developments. And then at 8 o'clock, Dr. Jim Keeney, and we like to bring on Dr. Jim to talk about medical stuff. Today is, I think, a particularly interesting and important visit from Dr. Jim, because with all of the problems with the Johnson & Johnson vaccine and the fact that you now have the state of California pausing its use of the vaccine, we got it. We need to get some actual information and perspective about the blood clot problem. How bad is it? Are the authorities making the right decisions here? And I know that he has some information that is pretty surprising. So that's coming up on the show. Right now, if you remember when President Joe Biden wasn't the president yet and was campaigning, and he was talking about all the different stuff he would do in his first 100 days in office. And one of the things that he said that he would do is establish a National Police Oversight Commission. So really, like, really bring the federal hammer down on police agencies all over this country. Now, he has not done that, and he's not going to do that. Somewhere along the line, he changed his mind about establishing a National Police Oversight Commission. Yesterday, a reporter asked him, so what do you have on deck in terms of police reform? And this is what he said. A lot. And I will tell you guys later. This was in a meeting with several members of the Congressional Black Caucus. So pretty vague, saying he's got a lot of ideas, but not willing to share any of them. And of course, we continue to have these issues of police encounters and people being killed. And it makes you wonder, what's the thinking at the federal level? Now, apparently what happened is, he said, I want to do this commission. And then other people got in his ear and said, you know, that's really not the most effective way to address this problem. And I will tell you something. It might be very attractive, particularly if you don't like President Biden. It might be a very attractive thing to say, oh, see, he made a big promise and then he abandoned his promise and he's a no good Nick and he's no better than any other politician. And what about that? Here's the interesting thing, though. Susan Rice is the one who said establishing this commission might not be the best way to approach it. And I heard that and I thought, well, let me think about it. Is it the best way? But then There's a police reform activist who really hit the nail on the head and who said, if your response to this problem of policing is to establish a national commission, then, and the guy's name is Wade Henderson, by the way, he's president of the Leadership Conference, he said, all you're doing is delaying actual change. And I went, oh my gosh, that's right. That's right. Because what is more glacial than a project that is started by creating a new commission or committee or blue ribbon panel? The creating of a commission is not reform. It doesn't do anything. It's an invitation for people to twiddle their thumbs and blep, blep, blep. You can probably figure out what gesture I just did with my hand to just blip, blip, blip for months on end, you know, just spitballing all kinds of crazy ideas. So that isn't how you tackle a pressing problem, by creating a commission or a committee. On the table in Congress is this reform bill that would do a couple of specific things: banning chokeholds, getting rid of qualified immunity, the legal doctrine that makes it very difficult to sue police officers, even when everyone agrees that they did violate your rights, and creating a national registry to track officers who have been found to have engaged in misconduct. Are these the most important things we need to be doing? Maybe not. But they are specific things that, if this law passes, will be implemented. So in other words, it's real. Whether you agree with it or not is a separate argument. That's real action. I don't know if it can get out of the Senate. I don't know if this law can get out of the Senate. But I guess what I'm saying is somebody did talk some sense into Joe Biden. Joe Biden, when he made the promise, was being a typical politician. Let's get a committee going and waste a bunch of time. And some people apparently were able to convince him that instead there should be a focus on actually passing laws and rules and regulations. And that's what's happening now. All right, let's take a little break here, get some news from Jen. And then when we come back, you know, police obviously are a huge part of the policing problem, but they're not the only part of it. And you're going, yeah, the criminals are a big part of it too. That is true. But there's also another group that's kind of a big part of this problem. And that group is having to rethink how they do business. I'll tell you who they are and what they're thinking about. It's KFI AM 640, live everywhere on the free iHeartRadio app.
This is that ice cold Michelle fight for that white gold. This one for them hood girls, them good girls, straight masterpieces. Stylin', wildin', living it up in the city. Got Chucks on with Saint Laurent, gotta kiss myself, I'm so pretty. I'm too hot.
KFI AM 640, live everywhere. On the iHeartRadio app, he has the same problem I have. The obsessive kissing of myself because of the very high level of prettiness that I possess. You're not alone, sir. This is the Bill Handel Show. Bill's off today. I'm Wayne Resnick. And, all this talk about police reform and what to do, and of course, most of the focus is on the police themselves, and that makes perfect sense. There are also people who I think quite rightly say, what about, in some cases, the behavior of the people that are confronted by the police? And I say to that, you know, sometimes that is also a worthy thing to look at and think about. And now there's a whole other group that is having to seriously reconsider how they do business, and it's retailers. Retailers are wrestling with when to call the police. And maybe we shouldn't be calling the police so much. I mean, George Floyd died over a clerk calling the police about a counterfeit $20 bill. I think we can all agree passing a counterfeit $20 bill is not a violent offense. I don't know if we'd agree it's a minor offense. I would say it's a minor offense. And generally speaking, and I saw plenty of counterfeiting cases when I was with the feds, not just the big ones where people were making hundreds of thousands of dollars, but we would have cases of people, for example, going into to a PX on a military base, which would make it a federal situation, and, you know, pass a counterfeit bill. Those people, rarely do the police take people to jail for passing a single counterfeit bill, and rarely do judges send such a person to jail. And here's a guy. That's what he did, and it ended up with the police trying to arrest him, and then he's dead. And I know that one of the clerks at Cup Foods, that store where this happened, said they felt really bad, that they kind of knew it was a funny bill, but they took it anyway to, like, help out George Floyd. They kind of felt bad, and they're like, look, I'll just take this bill, and I don't know what I'll do later. Maybe I'll get my own $20 bill and replace it. And then somebody else was like, we have to call the cops. So there was a great survey commissioned by, it was Sephora, the makeup company. And they commissioned a survey, and they really got a look at how people feel about being profiled when they're shopping. And people of color report consistently, so consistently, no matter what part of the country you're in, no matter how you ask about it, no matter what research tool that you use to look into it, so consistently, there's no way they're all lying that they are profiled when they go shopping. And in the Sephora survey, one of the things that came out is that people of color reported purposefully dressing up to go shopping so that they might appear to be upper class and maybe not be profiled. So incidents that happen while people are shopping, I'm thinking mostly shoplifting, often lead to police encounters. And if you're looking to do something about police encounters, one area you're going to have to look at is how retailers are handling their store security issues. Because the number of people who have encounters with the police, compare that to the number of people who shop. So there's a guy named Raymond Moss, and he runs this security company. He was a loss prevention officer for years. Now he runs a security company. And he had some very interesting thoughts. He said, you know, one of the things that happens in stores is you have loss prevention officers, and a lot of times the goal is to apprehend somebody. They'll even have a board in the back, in the office, with everybody's name and how many shoplifters they apprehended. Not every store has this, but a lot of them do. And it's about apprehension. So what happens? One, you're going to follow around the people you think are more likely to steal, and that's going to lead to racial profiling. Number two, you're not as interested in deterring them from shoplifting. You're more interested in catching them shoplifting. So this guy talked about what he would do. Is if he saw somebody that looked, you know, was up to no good, he would do things like come kind of near them, not too close, but close enough that then he could activate his two-way radio and they would hear that, and it would usually scare the person off from trying to steal anything. So the bottom line here is retailers, including big ones like Target and Best Buy, are looking at changing the way they do security at their stores and handle issues like shoplifting and passing of counterfeit bills to avoid the situations even involving the police in the first place.
Maybe it might be time for a better day.
KFI AM 640 live everywhere on the free iHeartRadio app. Good morning. It's the Bill Handel Show. Bill's not here today. I'm Wayne Resnick. And some of the top stories we are following at KFI. Governor Newsom says that the pause in the use of the Johnson & Johnson vaccine will not hurt California's vaccination efforts and will not hurt the reopening plans currently set for June. And the Minnesota police officer who shot Dante Wright and the chief of that Brooklyn Center Minnesota Police Department have resigned in the wake of that incident. Joining me now from KFI News, Steve Gregory.
Hey.
There you go. That's your cue to respond. So here's what's going
on.
Well,
I know it's my cue to respond. What I'm doing is trying to get some audio set up for you.
Okay, good. So I will quickly say why you're here. and then I will turn it over to you. Okay. 25 years ago, a young woman named Kristen Smart disappeared. 25 years later, arrests have been made.
Yeah.
Tell us everything you know.
This is, I want to say it's a long time coming, but it's also one of these things where we've been down this similar path before. It seems like every time something like this happens, we get close to an arrest, there's another search warrant served, something seems to happen to bring hope to the family that perhaps they'll either find remains of Kristen Smart or that they're going to make an arrest. Now, at least one of those two things has happened as of yesterday. Paul Flores, 44-year-old man, was a former classmate of Kristen Smart's back at Cal Poly San Luis Obispo. And on one evening, after a college party, Kristen Smart never did make it back to her dorm. And investigators have said for years that Flores was the last person to see her alive. And over that 25 years, they have done so many things. They've dug up sites where they thought her remains were. They've served search warrants. In fact, this is Sheriff Ian Parkinson, and this is him sort of itemizing all the things they have done over the years.
We've served over 41 search warrants on this case. Done physical searches of 16 different locations, one of which was back on the back hill, you may remember a few years ago, a complete reexamination of every physical item seized, submission of 37 items of evidence from the early days of the case for modern DNA testing, recovery of 193 items of physical evidence, new physical evidence. We've conducted approximately 137 person-to-person interviews, and in addition, completed over 500 additional police reports.
So that's a lot of work dedicated to this one case, and it was a very high-profile case. It remains a case of interest for a lot of people because you've got a young college girl who went missing after a party, and then you have this sort of nefarious thing hanging over it, and all kinds of theories were surfacing over the years. So what has changed? You heard the sheriff there talk about all the different types of evidence and things they've been doing over the years. Well, this Paul Flores has been a person of interest for quite some time. And you might recall a couple of years ago, they did a search warrant in one of his homes down in San Pedro. And it was a big deal. They thought maybe that this was going to be the thing that was going to clinch it and maybe arrest him, at least bring him in for questioning. But this time around, what is new, believe it or not, there's a podcast that's sort of indirectly tied to this. The sheriff did acknowledge that there's a podcast that was started a while back, and this podcast was set out to solve the crime or at least go through the angles of the crime that detectives might have missed. And in doing so, apparently there was some new information that cropped up, some people that were interviewed for this podcast. And the sheriff wouldn't get into specifics, but it sparked detectives to look into some other directions and talk to some other people, which led them to serving some more search warrants. And when asked specifically about what evidence the sheriff's department has against Flores, this is how he responds.
Forensic physical evidence was located. And yes, we believe it's linked to Kristen. And yes, we did find physical evidence at least two homes.
Now, what's odd about that is that in addition to Paul Flores being arrested, his 80-year-old father was also arrested as an accessory after the fact. So it's presumed, if you will, based on reports and neighbors and people that I've been hearing from, is that somehow the father may have helped him in covering up the crime.
Okay, now listen, it's a little bit early normally for a break. But let's take that break now because I'm under a strict self-imposed order to not break late for the rest of the show. So then when we come back, tell us more about what you know, and I may have a couple of questions for you as well.
Sure.
Steve Gregory is here from KFI News, and after 25 years, arrests have been made in the disappearance of Kristen Smart. This is KFI AM 640, live everywhere on the free iHeartRadio app. Ain't it fun? KFI AM 640, live everywhere on the free iHeartRadio app. It's the Bill Handel Show. Bill's off today. Wayne Resnick here with Steve Gregory from KFI News talking about the massive development In the 25-year-old Kristen Smart disappearance case, arrests have been made. Pick it up, Steve. Tell us more.
The thing that I think is kind of interesting about this, as I mentioned, is that after 25 years and after multiple bites at the apple, if you will, they finally got to the core. I just made that analogy up.
Pretty good.
Yeah, thanks. So I think what's interesting, though, is the arrest of the father. And
if somebody's joining us, I think, just can you recap who was arrested? Because right then when you said the father, there might be someone who thinks you're talking about Kristen Smart's father.
No. So we're talking about the Kristen Smart case. After 25 years, an arrest has been made. Paul Flores was arrested yesterday. He was a former classmate of Kristen Smart's at San Luis Obispo, Cal Poly. And his 80-year-old father was also arrested as an accessory after the fact. So it's presumed by that, by what the sheriff said and by other reports I'm reading, is that perhaps the father helped in some sort of cover-up of the crime. Paul Flores was booked for murder. And he's been this person of interest for a long time. They've been to his house a couple times in the last couple years. One of the things that I think is pretty interesting is that this last go around is when they came a couple years ago to his house, they took cell phones. I do remember a source saying that they were able to grab a cell phone or two cell phones. And I think they've been looking back over cell phone history. That's one of the things that they've been kind of alluding to over this last year. And the sheriff has been very coy about it. I mean, obviously, he can't get into specific evidence. And what I think is also an interesting part to this, too, is the way he talked about this podcast. I'd like to know more about what was discussed on this podcast, who was on it, and what specific episode of this podcast sort of sparked new information, or at least a new direction. So, I think they're both being arraigned tomorrow. Paul Flores was driven from San Pedro back up to San Luis Obispo yesterday, booked in the county jail up there and under zero bail. And the father, I believe, is in jail on $250,000 bail.
So isn't it interesting that, a 25-year long investigation, you talked about bites at the apple and getting to the core, but it's also, you have a 25-year-long investigation, and where do you end up? You end up right back where you started from. And what I mean by that is Occam's razor is the guy who was the last person to see her alive probably had something to do with it. I'm saying generally in cases like that. So it took 25 years in order to be able to build that case meticulously to start with nothing other than she's gone and this guy saw her last, to have to get enough information to get those search warrants in order to then get more evidence, in order to get more search warrants, and then eventually have enough evidence to put together a case for charges, and you end up right back at what was the most likely reality at the time. But it took 25 years in this case for them to gather it and put it together in a way that would fly.
You're right, but there's also another tactic here that I know you're aware of. And sometimes when you have a person of interest like this, sometimes this repeated action of going after them over and over and over causes them to do something that they catch. Sometimes they panic and they might text a message or they might make an action. I'm sure he was under surveillance also. I'm sure there was some sort of undercover surveillance with this guy to see after they did the last search warrant and went through his house and then left with a cell phone. A guilty person, this is the way detectives explain it to me, a guilty person's reaction after something like that is pretty telling. And sometimes they'll lead you exactly where you want them to lead you. And so I don't know if there was any of that at play here where they've been hassling this guy for a long time, hoping that he's going to trip up and do something. Now, keep in mind, there's still no body. They have no remains of Kristen Smart. So,
do we know that for sure? Or is it because you had audio earlier and they were talking about they have forensic evidence that mm-hmm. is linked to her. And I wanted to ask you, I didn't want to interrupt you. Do we know for a fact they don't have any kind of remains, or is it possible they do? Oh, we know.
Because the sheriff said yesterday, he was asked in his press conference if, you know, where's the status on looking for the remains? And he says, we're one step closer. He says, we're a little closer now than we've ever been.
So you're inferring from that it means they
may have a line on it?
Up to that moment, they had not recovered.
Right.
So then when you talk about forensic evidence linked to Kristen Smart, then are we talking could be clothing, other personal effects?
Yeah, and okay. The key to it in the in that cut, that longer cut I played, he talked about DNA, and that to me was a not I want to say a red flag in this case, but it was a flag, and it my ears perked up because that's usually the thing that helps cold cases.
Yeah,
and when he started talking about DNA, and he's like, well, you know, we didn't have DNA back then, and blah blah blah. I'm thinking, oh, interesting. So I'm wondering if they had because here's, you know, you go back and Paul Flores was a college kid like Kristen Smart. So, you know, Flores, you know, I'm totally just going based off of experience covering these cases. But, you know, I don't know that Flores was some sort of a calculated, you know, murderous serial murderer of any kind. So my point is that he may have kept something along the way or done something and tripped something up that may have had Kristen Smart's DNA on it, or, you know, something along those lines is the only thing I can think of, especially when he brought up DNA. And
right.
When you take that combined with whatever cell phone records of any conversations that Flores may have had over the years with people regarding this, I suppose we're going to learn about it here pretty quickly because the arraignments are scheduled for tomorrow. But but the fact they've got the father also, I think that they probably have something as strong as they've ever had.
They must have found something on the father's property.
I'm thinking
could only have arrived there from Paul Flores.
But when you say DNA and you start talking about it, I mean, yeah, I mean, and Paul Flores was in San Pedro. His father was in Arroyo Grande,
right,
which is up in near Pismo. I think it's in that area.
Yeah.
So he may be on a farm. I didn't look that up, but he may be on a farm or wide open space, which could have something to do with it.
Yeah. All right, Steve, thank you so much.
You got
good
it,
stuff.
Pal.
We'll talk to you again soon. All right. I know you're going to keep on that case and bring us the latest as it happens. When we come back, Dr. Jim Keeney returns to the show. Can we please finally get to the bottom of this Johnson & Johnson vaccine blood clot thing and whether or not the level of panic and the pausing of its use is medically appropriate? He's got some very interesting information about that. It's KFI AM 640 live everywhere on the free iHeartRadio app.